Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. The future isn't scary, not realizing its potential, however, could be. Just like on the recruiting trail, I've seen potential come in many forms as a coach. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hi, I'm Sarah Kewa.
And I'm Mickey Overman.
And this is Thank Fuck For That, a podcast in which we hear stories from our guests about the moments in their lives that might have changed everything.
Whether they are huge near misses or small, seemingly insignificant choices, we all have stories that we look back on and wonder, what if?
Our guests will bring us their best Thank Fuck For That moments so we can delight in how different their lives could have been.
Hello!
Hello!
Hello, Sarah.
Hi, everybody. We are on Zoom. We're on Zoom.
We are on Zoom because I'm in the Netherlands, like a little prick.
You've returned to the motherland to charge your batteries.
Yes. Yes. I cannot. I don't have any of the like plugs for the UK chargers. So I always have to go to the Netherlands to
charge your phone.
To charge my phone.
You refuse to buy one because then it means you properly move there.
You have to give up your Dutch citizenship, I think, if you
buy
that.
A UK plug.
Yeah. I think there's some kind of rule, you know.
Yeah, that means you're committing, and they don't like that.
Yes, exactly. Oh, they don't like that. They don't want that.
Charges
they don't want you to. They don't want you to give like pledge any kind of loyalty to a different king.
The king of plugs.
Yeah.
Wall or butt.
How are you?
I'm good. I'm very well.
I was all blighty.
It's actually the sun has started shining since you left. So
what?
Make of that what you will. We're having a jubilee over here. It's lovely. It's very nice. There's blue sky. I went to a party at the weekend. I made everyone play Wink Murder, which was funny.
Aww.
Yeah.
That's so wholesome.
It was wholesome. We played like a combination of The Traitors and Wink Murder. We were just like, I was like, just as we're all socializing, the murderer has to like just occasionally murder someone. And then after they've been murdered, we'll have a little discussion about who we think the winker is.
So you did it whilst people were just partying.
Yeah. I was like, everyone just carry on. Everybody has to carry on with the evening. So everyone just kept like chatting and moving around.
And it worked?
And then it worked. Yeah. It was really fun.
Oh, that's so fun.
Yeah, it was a good laugh. I mean, I was the first winker, which the pressure is suddenly very on. You're like, what do I do with my hands when I'm winking?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Can I wink?
The first question. Or yeah. Is it just, am I just blinking hard?
Yeah.
It turns out I can wink, baby. Oh, ooh. I can wink. I'm a big winker.
And did you win?
I won. They didn't think it was me. I made them all turn on each other as well, because I was being like quite tactical about like trying to take out people that weren't in my logical eye line.
Oh.
Yeah. And then I like sowed seeds of doubt.
But isn't it much easier for the winker if everyone's just preoccupied with, the party?
Yeah, exactly.
Like when everyone's like sat around the table, like watching for winking.
Yeah. Well, we were sat around. It was at the end of the night, and there was like six or seven of us left because some loads of people had left. So it was like 2 o'clock in the morning.
Oh, so okay. We were sat around the table. So wasn't it easier for you because they were all half asleep?
Yeah.
Or drunk.
And really drunk. Yeah. But oh man, I got those fuckers. Yeah, I got sure those did. Dumb drunk fuckers. So proud of myself. Yeah.
Really well done, Sarah. Did anyone
nobody's
play after
ever
you?
Gonna invite me to a party when they hear this? Because I'm like,
Yeah, they'll be like, oh my god, she's gonna wink at you.
I went to a sick house party and made everyone play Wink Murder.
You know, I love a game, so I would have been totally up for that. We tried to play Wink Murder once when a bunch of friends came over to mine. And I just looked around the group and I was like, you're not going to keep these people's attention. Like, I would love to play this, but I just already know that these are not the people whose attention you're going to keep. You need people to
brain
be on board.
In the bunch. Yeah. Yeah, no, I had to, there was a few intelligent minds in my gang. I was like, they'll focus on this.
Yeah. I had a very interesting discovery on this trip. I always knew that my parents, they both have like Catholic backgrounds or whatever. Mm. But I wasn't raised religious. And I knew that my dad's parents, they left the church when my dad was 12. And I was always curious, like, why? Like, was there some kind, you know, it's Catholics, who knows what it is? And I always kind of liked it. I always thought, like, that's a bit forward thinking of my grandparents to be like, you know what, I'm actually not on board with this church. And so I said to my dad, I was like, so what was the reason for Grandad and Grandma to leave the church? And my dad said, oh, he thought it was becoming too modern. So I had nothing to do with like my granddad being some sort of forward thinking. Yeah. My dad was like, oh, he did not like it. Like, he was way too conservative for the modern church.
They were letting the women and the gays in.
Yeah, basically. Like, genuinely, he was just like, I don't like it.
Oh my God.
And so he left.
That's crazy. Did he like leave the church and join a cult or something like that?
I think there was nowhere for him to go in this sort of changing world. And I knew, you know, he was a conservative guy. But I don't know. We had a really close relationship. So I just thought he was like maybe a bit. And then I said to my dad, I was like, do you think he would have liked that I became a comedian? Like, because he was a very funny guy and he loved comedy.
Yeah.
And my dad was like, in theory, he would have loved it.
In practice,
but he could have never.
He'd have been furious.
Yeah, if he ever heard any of your jokes, he would have been so upset.
Yeah.
But if he never had to hear any of your jokes, just theoretically, he would have thought that was great.
Do you think if you'd been able to tell him that you became like a conservative comedian?
If I just did a bunch of jokes about my wife.
Yeah. If your whole set was about how the church is too modern, he'd be like, right on. That's my kind of humor, actually. I was saying that myself.
I just thought it was quite the discovery because I had a very different version of these events in my head.
It's very strange because I don't know when your grandfather passed away, but it is odd when you realize that they were like human beings with full lives. And all of that happened like before you even really were like a full person.
Yeah.
When I found out my grandmother, her job was a sex therapist. And I was like,
I know, that's I so don't, amazing. I love that.
I don't understand this at all. I cannot comprehend. Like, when did this happen?
Have we mentioned this on the podcast before?
I don't know. I might have done. I feel like I've got a feeling I have.
Oh, really? Well,
maybe,
I know.
Maybe Ruben Kay's episode. I talked about it before.
Oh, maybe. Man, I that is basically the best thing ever.
Yeah, but I had no idea. I found out when I was in my 20s. I thought she was a nurse. Somebody vaguely probably said like when I was like very small, like I don't know, healthcare to like throw me off the scent, and I'd be like, okay, granny's a nurse.
Yeah.
And finding out, it was such a shock.
I love that. I just think that is so there's just like, I love asking questions because the sort of tragedy of your grandparents dying when you're, you know, when if they die when you're about in your teenager in your 20s or whatever, which I think is quite normal, you're often like too young still to really appreciate like the lives they've led and all all the things you should. There's always like, oh my God, the things I should have asked.
Yeah, you don't think to ask the fascinating questions and find out what it was like for them. Yeah. The other day my parents were here and we were talking about, there's like a few, they're like, my grandmother passed away like over 15 years ago. But like my mum is like going through a few of the bits that were left by her that were like, we were like, oh, we're not ready to throw them away, but we don't actually know what to do with them and stuff.
Yes. Like, ready
to like sell that. But what, and I was like, I still have that old like necklace that you gave me that was granny's. My mum was like, what? And I was like, yeah, that little gold necklace that you gave me when I was a child, I still have that one. And I like went to get it and I brought it out and my mum was like, this was not your grandma. She was like, I don't know whose this is and I don't know what you're thinking, but this is nonsense. This is not an heirloom, this is not real, it's not gold.
Oh my God, that's amazing.
It's so stupid. I love that. I was like showing it to people like, this was passed down to me from my grandmother.
It's not. It's bullshit.
It's probably from Claire's accessories. It's so embarrassing.
Well, if it's still gold, it can't possibly be from Claire's accessories.
I don't think it is. I think it's fake. I just had this memory. I have this really vivid memory in my head. Maybe my grandmother gave it to me, but I think
maybe your mom just didn't know.
Yeah.
About this heirloom, because she was being passed over.
But maybe granny went to Claire's.
And
I was like, oh, this must be one of your pieces.
This must be 1,000 years old.
Yeah, I was like, oh well, you know, I've always got that. Anytime I've ever had any money trouble, I've been like, well, you know, you got the insurance of that.
I think that's so funny because my parents are kind of going through a similar thing where they have from both our grandparents, they have like sets of plates and what is it called? Like a
cutlery.
Yeah, all of
crockery.
But you know, like a whole set of like the plates and cups and things.
Crockery. Like, yeah, it's not
crockery.
Cutlery.
Yeah. Thank you. Not cutlery. Crockery.
I guess
they have. Yeah, they have this complete, especially from my dad's parents, they have this complete set of crockery, which is now just like this beautiful vintage.
Yeah.
And it's just in a box in like the attic. And they are now, so they were saying that they're going to sell it because they were just like, we are never going to use this flowery set of crockery.
It's not stuff that anybody would ever use now. It's all so extravagant.
It's just not to their taste.
Yeah.
And it's not, I think actually someone would really like it. Someone like, there could be someone out there who would like properly love this because it's a really beautiful set, but it's like, it's not to their taste. It's not to any of our taste. And
is it like the kind of stuff that would show up in like a really vintagey tea shop now?
Literally. Yeah. Yeah. It's like with like little flowers and like a gold rim.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Do you know? Like it's really nice. But they were just like, it's just been in a box for so long. There's probably someone who would actually want this stuff and who would actually be happy to use it. And there's something so sad about stuff that's supposed to be used, like objects that are supposed to be used being in a box. And then they said that and I was like, that's great. I think that's great because like, it's so easy to become a hoarder.
Mm-hmm.
And then they said, and we're also going to sell our old crockery, like our set of crockery, like the ones that I grew up with. And I was like, okay. Like I immediately was like, hold on.
This
and
then should be a discussion.
Yeah, like, and then like, it was like 2 seconds and then I was like, I don't want it. Like, why am I getting, like, I can't be upset about something.
You're just nostalgic about it.
It's so immediately like nostalgic. And I was like, oh, that's a bit sad. And then I thought like, no, don't be this person. Like, have things like move on. Like it's nice.
I've definitely made that mistake where I've gone, oh, whoa, you can't get rid of that. You can't, like, and my mum's gone, well, you have it.
Yeah, this is my grandma's necklace, please.
I don't want it. And it's like, I end up with like a serving platter that like I'm never going to use. And then I hang on to it and I'm like, what the fuck is this for?
Yeah. And I already have a thing a while ago, a couple of years ago, my parents were getting rid of their set of pots and pans that they have had since their marriage. It was like part of their set that they got when they got married. And I also have like a little tea and coffee and sugar can, like a little set, which was nice. For my grandparents' marriage set.
Yeah.
And so I have these two things, the pots and pans that my parents have, they had for 40 years. They are in pristine condition.
What?
At the, well, my, listen, my mom, I have this bit at the moment where I'm like, we're all diagnosing our parents like millennials and it's great.
Yeah.
And my, I've diagnosed my mom with OCD because everything is clean and yeah. everything has a place.
Mm-hmm.
And no normal functioning human being would have pristine pots and pans after 40 years of use.
No way.
That like it's a, just, it is just ridiculous. But to the point where like,
and a mental illness.
Yes. And I, and constantly I'm feeling like every time I use the pots, Patrick and I are like, they already look 10 years worse than when I got them last year. Like,
yeah.
Like, and we're really trying because we're both just like, oh my God, it can't be that they had them for 40 years and we have them for 1 year and they're unusable. But I don't know how they did it.
How? Yeah, it's like an actual mystery. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's wild. Do you think that that like our grandchildren will have this with like our crockery and stuff? Because like I remember like a few years ago
our collection of mugs from different like things we've done.
Yeah. Well, everyone like a few years ago got that mug that was like the handle was a C and then the rest was
the cunt one. Yeah. Yeah.
And I'm like, is someone gonna dig that out from like a bunch of their parents' stuff in like 80 years time and be like,
this? And they're like, oh my that's God, your grandmother's. So retro. That would be amazing. I just like this idea that like I have all these mugs that are just like that are just a collect. I quite like it. I like that like everything is just from different random, I don't know, schools or things like things that you've just been a part of, or like you'll do a podcast or whatever, or like Sports podcast. Direct or whatever. Like I like that it's all just like madness and it's kind of it shows you where you've been. But I can't imagine that anyone would look at that and be like, we should sell this collection.
Yeah, yeah, this is going to be worth something now. This mini eggs mug came with an Easter egg in the early 2000s and has clearly been very loved.
yeah, exactly. I have like a mug with like a, and it's like Colorado. I've never been to Colorado.
Yeah.
It's not worth anything.
My favorite mug at the moment is Richard Herring's Leicester Square. Podcast.
Oh, that's a nice one.
It's so big. It's like a full-on tankard style mug. It's great.
The big mugs are great. They're also quite hard to buy. That's why everyone loves the Sports Direct one.
Yeah.
Because it's massive. But I have one that this is so geeky, but when this is like 10 years ago or something. I had like this job working in a hostel. And me and my friend Stacy worked at reception for the hostel. And it was just like, we had the evening shifts. So 3 to 11. So the two of us, 3 to 11, there's basically no one checks in from like maybe at 3, but most people like, there was not really anything to do. So we were just giggling and we were really big fans of the community, the show Community. Did you remember the show?
Yeah.
And in Community, Donald Glover and I think Danny Pudi, his name is, they had this joke where they were doing a fake morning show and they had mugs and it was like Troy and Abbott in the morning.
Troy and Abbott in the morning.
Yes.
Yeah, yeah.
So we made a Mickey and Stacey in the evening mug. And
that's
we,
so great.
It was just for us and it was just like this little in joke. And I don't even, like, I'm not even in contact with Stacey anymore, but I always drink my teas out of it because we bought these really massive mugs.
Oh man, that's really nice. That's a great memory. Your grandchild is going to love that.
They'll be like, what is this in reference to?
Who is Stacy? Did grandma ever mention Stacy?
Yeah, she was just in my life for like maybe a year.
Yeah,
stuff but, like you know
stuff like that is wild.
Yeah,
I'm named after my parents. I don't know if I've told you this. I'm named after a friend of my parents called Sarah, and I have never met her.
No,
don't you think that's wild?
Oh my God, that's amazing.
So I'm like, she can't, she either you weren't
she
that
was
close.
So significant during that time.
Yeah, but I'm like, I've never met her, which makes me worry that I'm the problem.
Oh my God.
Like,
oh
what, yeah. What if they had like, me?
Oh God.
And they're like,
you've named that after me?
We can't introduce this loser to Sarah.
That's amazing. That, I mean, I hope that's what it is because that would be amazing. I am I genuinely like my mum was just, this is so funny. There's so many, there's been so many discoveries. I've only been here 2 days, but my mum told me that that my grandpa, so my mum's from a family of 5 kids and she's the second child. And the first child, a daughter, my mom told me that my grandpa just went to the, oh, fuck, I can't think of any of the names now because she told me this story in Dutch. Where do you go to register a child when you've had it?
Some registry office or something, I don't know.
Yeah, so
the
hospital? Went,
I don't know, where do you do it?
But you have to register and then you name it and then the, that's how you get the birth hall. Certificate.
Yeah.
Let's say the town hall. So he went to the town hall and just named the baby without asking grandma if that was all right.
He went and named his sister.
No, he named his child. So this is my grandpa.
Yeah.
So my mom's sister.
Oh.
The first one. He just went to the town hall and just named her because he liked the name Jacqueline. And just, my grandma, and it's not after anybody. It's not like my grandma wanted to do the sort of Catholic tradition of naming the child like after one of her sisters or, you know, whatever. He just came back and he was like, this is our child's name.
That's so funny.
It's so fucked up.
Unsentimental way of doing it as well. Just going, oh, I was passing
and
by.
I said to my mom, I was like, Jacqueline. What was he thinking? And she was like, I think he knew that grandma would never agree to the name. So he was like, if I just register it.
If you went through the fucking hell of childbirth and like the so one treat, up. Like obviously having a baby, but like one of the treats post having a baby is getting to name the baby, right?
Yeah. So she named all four after that.
Yeah. Okay. He's allowed one.
So she got hers. He didn't get to name any more babies.
Yeah. And that's why the previous 3 children were called I Hate My Husband.
It's incredible. I'm glad if not for the fact that she named the subsequent 4, it would have been a very harrowing tale.
Yeah.
But
it's a nice name though as well, to be fair.
Also, it's a nicer name than all the other children. like including my mom. Like he was right. That is a beautiful name.
That might explain why, do you know when you meet people and like there's like 4 siblings and they're called like Tom, Tim, Tara, and then it's like John.
Yeah.
Do you think it's that? The dad goes rogue at the
end. It is 100% that. So I said to my mom, I said, well, you took after your dad then, because not that she didn't discuss it with my dad, but she named my older sister and me. And we both have names that are very unusual.
Oh, I see.
And then my dad got to name the 3rd one. And my younger sister, whose name is Anouk, that is a very common Dutch girl's name. There's so me and Puk, the older one, we always had people being like, what's your name? And then with Anouk, it was like, you would have that thing where it's like Laura S, Laura P, Laura. That was like the name Anouk. So it's to people were always like Anouk as the 3rd one. Like that's so that doesn't fit the other.
Yeah.
That doesn't fit the MO of the previous namer.
They really ran out of steam at the end there. Yeah. Oh man, yeah. Sarah is common as muck. There's so many Sarahs in my year at school. Tom and Sarah. It's me and my brother. My mom.
Yeah, those are real classics.
My brother
is
was
he named
so...
after.
My brother was so premature that my mum forgot that one of her, like Tom has a cousin called Tom because my mum forgot it was already a Tom in the family. She was like, I don't know, Tom, I guess it's Tom. That's that. I think I recognize that a baby could be called Tom, so why not?
That's amazing.
Yeah.
Oh, you don't want to have the same name as your, sorry, should we get Laura in?
Yeah, should we just do it? Should we just like do the little intro?
We can talk forever because I've had so many things happen on this trip. Revelations.
Should we have a guest?
Yeah.
Our guest today is the incredible Laura Lex. Laura is a comedian. She is a podcaster herself. She's an author. She's written 2 amazing books. She's so funny, so talented. It's so nice to have her. So let's
get in.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
If you're looking for plump lips that last, you need to know about Juvederm lip fillers. With Juvederm Volbella XC and Juvederm Ultra XC, your lip look, whether it's subtle or bold, can last up to 1 full year with optimal treatment and no additional maintenance. Find a licensed specialist and see if it's right for you at Juvederm.com today. That's Juvederm.com. Add fullness to lips in adults over 21 with Juvederm Volbella XC or Juvederm Ultra XC. Do not use if you have severe allergies or a history of severe allergic reactions, or if you're allergic to lidocaine or the proteins used in Juvederm. Tell your doctor if you have a history of scarring or taking medicines that decrease the body's immune response or that can prolong bleeding. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. As with all fillers, there's a rare risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. For full important safety information, visit Juvederm.com.
Hi, it's me, Sarah. Thank you so much for listening to Thank Fuck for That. If you're enjoying the podcast, please sign up to our Patreon to support us. We need some help making it. We're doing it all by ourselves. So please sign up, even if it's just £3 a month. That would make the world of difference. Thanks so much. Here's the episode.
Hello!
Hi!
Hello!
Hi, how's it going?
Good, how are you?
I'm all right, yeah.
Thanks so
much
for doing
this. Look at your setup, that looks so good.
I was really lucky when I moved house, the attic came with this like 70s stand up wallpaper.
Yes, it's wallpaper, it looks real.
I know it does, doesn't it? And I didn't realize, like, obviously, when we moved in, how much online gigging I was going to end up doing.
Oh,
I was
like, God, oh. Yeah.
So I've got my like New York Comedy Club
back
wall.
That's amazing.
Yeah, it looks like you did it purposefully. So that's great. Right.
It's my wipe clean wallpaper, and I had to have this as my office because Tom can't stand up in here because it's got the like roof thing, so his office is the garage, so it's it all works out really well.
That's a little
hobby. He's too tall for the attic.
I'm 5 foot, so I can stand up fine in here and it's fine, but Tom's like 6'3", so he cannot be up here. he can like deliver tea through the hatch and that's it.
Oh my God.
He's like as tall as you are when he comes through the hatch.
Yeah, pretty much.
This is a podcast about life-changing moments. Do you feel like you dwell on the moments that could have or changed your life?
No, I forget about them very, very quickly. I guess that could have been really different, couldn't it? Boop, boop, boop. And then I've just carried on. I'm
really
quite,
that's so healthy.
Wow.
Do you think that
are you both dwellers?
Oh, yeah.
Big dwellers, lying at night thinking about. So what keeps you up? The future.
The future. Yeah, uncertainty in the future. I think because uncertainty is my big trigger. So anything I can't control, whereas the past is done, I know what happened there. Mm. I was just saying to someone the other day, like, I don't believe everything happens for a reason. I don't think that kind of nonsense. I'm not a like, well, it must have been because of a big plan. But what I do think is that humans are really, really good at adjusting to whatever's happened. So like I was talking to someone about breakups at the weekend and I was like remembering how heartbroken I've been after breakups and stuff. And now I'm with Tom and I'm not like, I had to go through those relationships to have met Tom and to have this one. But I do think you just go, oh my God, thank God I broke up with that prick. Like, can you imagine? But I'd probably be, I wouldn't be just as happy because they were awful, but I'd convince myself I was happy if I'd stayed with them. So I sort of think human brains are quite clever at doing that. They just adjust to the lighting level, you know?
Yeah, that is true, isn't it? I think, like, obviously there are people who say those kind of things, like everything happens for a reason or like, it's all destined to work out in the end. And it's like, that gives us no credit whatsoever. Because it's it worked out because I worked it out. Like, I spent so much time and energy solving the issue or finding a solution to the problem or making my relationship work. Like,
And I think it's so like, it's so diminishing of the hugeness of stuff that happens to people to say that, because otherwise you're basically saying like, oh, everybody that lost somebody incredible at a really young age or something, oh, it's for a reason. And you're like, no, it wasn't. It was just blind, horrible chance and circumstance. And like, you didn't. And then what I think is like say something like that happens and you bend over backwards to cope with it. It doesn't mean you were always meant to be twisted into a weird position. It means you found a cushion to make the pressure on your hips a bit nicer. Tilted the TV to this weird wonky angle you're at. You made it the best it could be for what it was. But I hate that idea that like, oh, it must have been meant to be then. Shut up. No, there's no meant to be.
What I do like is that you realize your own strength from these, from these moments. So it's like, yeah, it would have been much better if it didn't happen, but it's like, I do know now that I can handle something like this.
Yeah.
And it makes life a little bit less scary. Like once I was through my first big breakup and it was really hard, I was like, at the end of it, I was like, oh, I could do that again. So it like made me less scary to fall in love again. Cause I was just a bit like, no, I will come out the other end.
Yeah. I remember that my grandma died when I was 16, I think. And I took it really badly because no one had ever died in my life before. And I just couldn't cope with the idea that someone could die, because death is like the big bad ending in films. It's the thing that they dangle and then don't do to your characters when you're a kid. So the idea that somebody I loved just wouldn't be around anymore just didn't make any sense. And then when she died and it was like, oh, she's no longer around, but I still remember her. She still exists in the stories and everybody else has carried on and there are little moments of happiness. That was fascinating to just go, the worst thing happened and we've all carried on.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that is really beautiful.
Do you remember like what kind of explanations you were given about death when you were younger? Like, I can't really, like, I remember being really fixated on the idea, like, what is it? Well, like, where do you go? Like, what happens when I was young? Cause I just couldn't, like, cause obviously everyone's like, well, you're just, you know, you're dead. Your body stops working. Your brain stops working. And being like, yeah, but like, where is my brain? Like, where is me? And eventually I think my mom just being like, oh, I'm fucking no, leave me. My parents have never been religious, so they couldn't be like, well, actually you go and see God and he lives on a cloud. Like my mom was just like, I don't fucking know, Sarah, leave me alone. I've got no idea. It's scary. We're all scared.
Yeah. My mom is religious and her parents were, and so I was raised religious, so right up until I was about 19-20 I went to church and was like,
oh, wow,
religious. So I thought, you know, it all depended on whether you'd been a good enough person for whichever book you were reading, and I'm not religious anymore, I can't bear it all. But at the time, that was an extra level of fear. Like, not only are you dead, but now you're about to be judged. Oh God.
Yeah. Especially as a teenager.
Were there a lot of kids in your school that were also religious? That must, because that must
yeah,
be weird,
but in
anyway.
That like C of E religion way, you know, right. That sort of like quietly insipid religion, like it's not big enough in life to be, I don't know, like your overwhelming personality, but it's just there in everything. Like we used to say the Lord's Prayer in assembly and stuff, but you didn't even really think about what you were saying. So it was sort of that kind of religion, you know.
But were you then a little bit more religious than sort of like the kids in your school, or was it all a bit the same?
Yeah, I probably was. My parents were quite good. They did let us like make up our own mind, because my dad's not religious, but my mom is. But I think I'm quite pliable to what I'm told. So when I was told like there's a big invisible God and he's seeing everything, you know, I was like, well, I will make him happy.
All of that stuff.
Like in church choir and stuff like that. Yeah. It was very like... I want to say gullible, but it feels offensive to people who are religious. But that, you know, that's how I feel. I'm
but
very
all of that
easily
stuff is
led.
Perfect. Yes. It's perfect fodder for a sort of the child as well, isn't it? It's in the same way that, like, I'm not likening God. Like, God is lots of different things to lots of different people. But in the same way that your behavior, like, also is in response to Santa Claus at Christmas.
Yeah,
like, it's just that perfect, like, tool to, like, go, you know, there is actually a, like, a bigger reason, there's a bigger, like, purpose to us behaving in the way that we behave. And that's, like, great for a child, because you're like, well, you know, God is my friend, and I, you know, I'll always have a friend if God's around, and this is the reason we sing these songs and say these prayers. Like, that is so comforting for a child who is so overwhelmed by the world.
Yeah. We had one kid in school, one girl in my high school who was much more religious than the rest of us. And I think about her all the time, because I'm like, it must have been that must be so weird for her to be around all of these people who just were so different and just had such a different outlook on life. And it must have been like, she coped absolutely fine and she fit in really well with us, but just occasionally she'd be like, no, but yeah, I mean, you are all going to hell.
Yeah.
She knew that.
Yeah, she knew, and she was like, I like you guys, but like, no chance. Yeah.
But like, the moment we all get to the afterlife, I don't know you.
Yeah, I don't know you. Once you stand for, like, in front of St. Peter's gates, I'll be like waving from the other side. Like, yeah. No, obviously not.
Laura, have you ever had like a big near miss experience?
Yeah, although it wasn't really mine, but it's when I was the summer holidays of my first year of university, I came back to my parents' house. And my mum had a really life-threatening illness. She had something called viral encephalitis, which is a bit like meningitis.
Oh, wow.
And so just in the middle of the night one night, she'd had a migraine all day, and then she went to bed. And I remember sort of being in bed, and then I think we heard a bang in the bathroom, and then my dad went running down the corridor and sort of got the bathroom door open, and she had a fit and knocked herself out on the sink.
Oh my God.
And so we sort of got her to hospital, and she lost all of her memory, so couldn't remember who we were.
Wow.
And had to sort of come back from that, and she was very lucky to survive, really. And it was kind of like this type of disease that I'd never heard of it before. So, you know, when you sort of have something come out of nowhere and you go, what's this now? Never heard of this. Right. Okay. That's
a
thing.
Neurological disease, then, is it?
It's a virus. Infection. It's a virus that it's in a world of viruses that sort of, I can't remember what else it's linked to, but it's very similar to meningitis. Mm. And I think the virus itself, I think it like lives in the base of your spine, and it can go completely undetected. And then it sort of, it shoots up your spinal column. And so in mum's case, it went into her brain, and her brain makes your brain swell. And so then you get pressure on your skull, like that kind of thing.
Which is never good.
Nope. You don't want that. And then, yeah, I think it can go other ways. But that's what happened in mum's case. And then obviously, like any kind of neurological damage like that, you're sort of... It depends which bit pressed or where you hit your head. Like mum, bless her, like hit her head really badly as she passed out. So she lost a lot of her short-term memory. So she could really remember like her childhood, and she would talk about things, but I'm one of four children, and she didn't know who any of us were. So we'd be visiting her in the hospital. And I remember one point, like going out to sort something out for somebody and having her go, where's the other one gone? And really looking at my dad, like, do you promise me these are my children? Because I got no memory of this.
Yeah.
And us being like, whoo,
those guys?
Yeah.
Oh my God. That is
so intense. Did she remember
your
dad?
She did remember dad. Yeah. She remembered dad.
Yeah.
Because
that would
like,
be such a
all
stressful
of language
all
got
stressful.
Very scrambled. I remember there being one language test where a doctor asked her, like, showed her a stethoscope and said, what's a stethoscope? What's this? And she said stethoscope. And then they said, and what's it for? And she said it was for measuring flowers and aeroplanes.
So really interesting which pathways had kind of gone scrambly, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
Wow. Oh my God.
So it was a strange, and it was such a, like, it was obviously mad for mum. And I'd say in some ways she's still recovering from it, really, even though it was 15 years ago now. But for me, it was so weird because I was just back on the summer holidays, you know? I'd just been at my first year of uni. I'd just been a fresher. And then I came home and this happened. And so really quickly, like, my brother was only 10, 11, and my sister was 15, 16. So I had to become, I had to look after them. So I, the worst thing about it, which is so weird when you're like, you know, your mum's dangling, but you've got practical stuff to get on with. My dad was self-employed. So I had to work with him because we had to get this contract that he was working on done in a certain time frame, or basically the whole family was bankrupt. And we had to sort of keep visiting mum, but I'd passed my driving test at like 17 and not driven since, like, learned in a Nissan Micra and passed. And then because my brother and sister needed school shoes and needed the shopping done and stuff, they had to put me on the car insurance for this Volkswagen Sharan, which is like a 7-seater minibus thing. And I remember trying to drive this damn thing around town and, like, go and get the kids fitted for shoes and, like, get them all sorted. And just being like, 3 weeks ago, I was so drunk at university, like, worrying about my drama degree. And now this is happening. And then 6 weeks later, I was back at university and I'd had to go back, you know, like, there was no choice. But I remember this day taking the kids into town for something or other and trying to get this fucking car into this fucking parking space.
Oh,
and just,
my,
like,
God.
Paolo Nutini's album was on in the car because that was the album that had come out that summer. And then, like, this whole family were, like, watching me try and park this fucking bus. And then on my, like, ninth maneuver, the dad of the family came over and knocked on the window and went, "I found you a bigger space over here, love."
Oh,
and
that's just, so, like, nice.
Led me. Like, thank you. Oh,
I went humiliating, but you went nice. All right, that's fine.
Sometimes you just need, like, I'm the biggest feminist. There are so many amazing drivers who are not men. Oh my God. Sometimes you just need a dad to get involved, don't you? You just need a blokey dad to just intervene. I was once trying to parallel park in the middle of the night. I'd come back so late from a gig and I was so stressed. And it was this narrow little gap and it was so early in the morning. I was so tired and I was like, I'm going to have a breakdown. I just need to go.
Yeah.
And this man pulled up beside me and just started doing the gestures of like where, aww, how you spin. And then he went like that. And then he was like gesturing for me to go back. And then he was like, stop. And then he was like, other way. And then stop. And he just guided me into the parking space. And I was like, thank you so much.
Yeah.
And I was like, any kind of semblance of I'm like strong, independent went out of the window. I was like, I know that you're somebody's father and I appreciate you so much right now.
It's a real dad energy that I will give you that. I'm a terrified driver, but it's just because I never drive. But my sister is like a sublime driver. Yeah. So she has that dad energy as well, where she will just help other people. She just has none of the the fear that I have around driving. I imagine this made you quite a good driver, actually, all of this.
I am a good driver now. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
It's,
but I've got a reasonably sized car again, though.
Yeah, that will help.
I love all the, when you hear stories like this, because every element of it is so alien to people who haven't experienced it, like, for your life to just change like that. And then these just sort of mundane elements, like, you never, like, when you imagine something like that happening to your life, you don't imagine. And then I had to go shoe shopping with my 10-year-old brother in the midst of it all.
Yeah,
it's just, it's so wild. How did your siblings cope with it?
Yeah,
they did okay. Like, and I think it's one of the reasons that this, maybe it's one of those things in my life that is so odd. And I think I'm still processing it because I'm not sure how much I processed it at the time because there was so much to do. And then I went again and I was gone again. And I had three more years of my degree to do. So I never came back to live there properly again. I only came back for holidays. And so I didn't help them do the main bit of mum's recovery. And I wasn't there as much as I maybe should have been. Like, maybe I should have deferred a year. I don't know, but didn't.
Are you the eldest?
I'm not. I've got an older sibling.
Is that a brother or a sister?
A sister.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
But so she had some stuff going on that year that was sort of difficult to deal with as well, and sort of worked full time, and me being home on a holiday meant I was really around.
It just felt, you know, to you. You know,
I can't remember if I was working at the pub then. I had my pub job from when I was 15 that I was, you know, would do. But because my dad's a self-employed builder, I'd always worked with him. So I kind of, I cannot remember whether I was at the pub that summer or not, but I sort of was the one that default had a lot more time around.
Yeah.
But I don't know. I think like I think sometimes with these life changing things happen, but they cause busyness, you don't have any reflection time, and then you're cracking on with something else. And so, and then you sort of stop and go, God, that was awful, wasn't it? Yeah. Because
yeah.
I vividly remember the next summer I came home, my dad snapped his leg bone playing football.
Stop going home, Laura.
Yeah, like, absolutely.
That's the joke I made. Yeah. I remember, after that happened with dad's leg, I went, guys, I'm not coming home next summer because, like, my brother Ron will die. And everybody being like, don't make that joke, blah, blah, blah. But for me being like, oh, you guys aren't having the same experience of this as me.
Yeah.
No. That I'm coming home and then these things are happening. Whereas, so I find it one of those really awful experiences that my telling of it is so me-centric, when actually what happened to mum is just colossal, and having to relearn. And like, my mum is so smart and really like really verbally clever. And a lot of that went for a really long time. And she's an avid reader, and a lot of the ability to read for long periods of time vanished, and she found that and still finds that frustrating. Like, it was one of the things, so my second book Pivot, one of the characters in that gets encephalitis, and I talked to mum a lot, and I was like, can I put this in the book, because I'd never heard of it before it happened to you. And then in researching, I was like, it is common, like, and we didn't know what to do. And then you didn't know what to do. And she was like, yes, like, let's get the word out about it, that it's this like thing. And like, this is how you come back from it, and you're not alone, and stuff like that. But yeah, it's one of those life experiences that changed me massively, because maybe partly because of my older sibling not being able to take on the responsibility I had to. And she's always been the caregiver out of the four of us. So,
yeah.
But then also the weirdness of jumping from world to world, of being on a building site, working with dad, and then quickly getting him to the hospital, and then getting home, cooking for the siblings, and then getting back to the hospital to pick dad up. There's no point me visiting mum. She didn't know me, and us being there upset her, and then getting dad home, and then getting back up. And then suddenly back to university, which was hard in other ways, but also, I don't know, quite like easy.
What do you say when you go back to uni as well? Like, everyone's like, how was your summer? You're like, where do I even begin? Like, how do I explain this?
Yeah. And suddenly you're just back to being allowed to be this kind of, I don't know, a bit of a carefree knobhead.
The most irresponsible of people.
Yeah.
Versus, like, you couldn't have had more responsibility at that point.
I think I was a bit bad there, really, in that I don't think I was as supportive as I probably should have been to the family. I think I did do that thing of getting back to uni and going, good, I can stop engaging with what's going on at home again, you know?
Probably just self-preservation. I mean,
yeah, probably. But look at, you know, like, looking back on it, I'm 36. I go like, oh, okay, they might have needed a bit more. Or maybe couldn't have been, you know, because if you can't be practical help, maybe wasn't have been that helpful. But I don't know how much I engaged with it again after that. And I feel guilty for that.
Did your mum get her memory back? Yeah. Like how long did that take?
A few months. I think the like big stuff, like who we were and stuff like that, came back relatively quickly, within a couple of weeks.
Okay.
But the ability to hold on to things can be a little bit flimsy sometimes. So you'd have a conversation and then you'd have it again a week later. But that has all improved as time's gone on, which again, we were really lucky with, because in terms of it, like as a near miss moment, you kind of go, God, that could have been, she could very easily have died if the ambulance crew, like if wait times for the ambulance were what they are now, I don't know what that would have been. Or we could have lived the rest of our lives without her really being back as much as she's come back in a psychological capacity. So we were so lucky that essentially life went 99% back to normal.
Yeah, and how much of it was the fall?
I don't know.
They don't know.
They might. I don't. Which again is where like there's big gaps in my like act, my and my, because I honestly, it's one of those things where you're like, I see it so through my viewpoint of it instead of knowing all of these details. And I can't remember if I knew at the time, and then life got really busy. Like,
but that is literally, that's all you know, because you were a first year student.
Yeah.
So like, and also nothing like this happened to me when I was at university. I was so self-involved in my first year of uni.
Me too.
Because I was like, I don't think anybody could possibly understand what I'm going through.
Yeah.
Because the overwhelming aspect of leaving your home, and you're trying to make all these new friends, and you're so just in it, and you're like, this is our, you know, like those first moments where you start calling uni home and things like that. You're like, I'm a different person now. So to go through all of that and then have this huge thing happening back with your family, like I don't blame you for not engaging as much as you wish you did, because you were still a child.
Yeah.
I don't think I thought about it at the time.
You were starting your independent life. Those were your first moments of your life outside of that home.
And it's a really selfish time for someone else to have a tragedy. Yeah. It's like, I think it probably is my most selfish time of life. I hope I've not been that. But you're right. Like you cannot but be self-involved, because your concept of your life isn't the same as it was 12 months ago. So you are totally just...
If you were to try and like ask me to try and recall anything that happened with anyone else in that first year I was at university, like what my mom or my brother or anyone, like I don't think I could tell you anything.
Really?
Yeah.
I don't think I could tell you anything of what happened in that.
Did That's you go amazing. A long way away to uni? Where did
no,
you
I
go?
Went an hour away. I went to Leicester from Nottingham, but I hated it. Like I really struggled with it. So like, and I was so in my own head about like how difficult it was and how how much I was struggling, that I have no sort of real recollection of like what was going on with my family.
Yeah. It's called separation, right? This process.
Yes.
From like when you're a teenager and you become like sulky to all the way to when you actually separate. It's like a normal thing that everyone goes through. And I do think, Laura, that when you came back, I mean, you snapped into like mother mode.
Yeah.
For your younger siblings in a way that was like incredibly responsible and helpful.
And I think go on.
I think that's part of like we were saying right at the beginning, I'm a very in the present and worried about the future person. So when something needs doing, I'm so good in a crisis.
Right.
If somebody needs something in a crisis, I'm brilliant. But if you say this is happening next month, worry about it, I will be in knots within 7 minutes.
Yeah.
I will, of course, talked us all into like a suicide pact rather than deal with whatever's happening next month.
Just like, end it.
When just I had a breakdown. Yeah, like, let's not bother. No, that seems dreadful. Let's not do it.
Have you ever had a sliding doors moment?
Yes.
Yes. So my sliding doors moment is my university choice, where I did an undergraduate master's degree in theatre at the University of Kent. And the way it worked was you did 3 years of drama, and then in the fourth year, you could specialise in a subject. And I chose the University of Kent because they had a radio production fourth year specialism. And I thought it was fascinating. It was really cool. It was all about how to build the soundscapes for like, oh, somebody's walking in a carpet, like da da da. And I wanted to write radio sitcoms. Yeah, like that kind of thing. But also putting scripts together and casting and just general radio. And then at the end of my first year, they cancelled that specialism.
Oh, no.
But it was too late. I was already at the university now. So by the time I got to the fourth year, the only specialism that was vaguely of interest to me was stand-up comedy. And so whatever budgetary decision led to radio being cancelled made me go, oh, well, the only other practical one I'm bothered about is stand-up. I guess I better do that.
That's fascinating.
Now I'm a comedian.
That's so, I guess, yeah.
Yeah, we should tell people that.
Yeah.
And I've been broke ever since.
Well, that's amazing. When I was a kid, I wanted to be a bank manager, and I had a little bank in the corner of my bedroom. And my mum and dad once took me on a tour of Midlands Bank as like a treat. And I think it was a birthday thing, and the bank like showed me around the offices and gave me loads of stationery. And I think I might be one of the only people in the world that wanted to be a banker and became a comedian instead. Like
that is the flip reverse
of most people's dreams.
Was Monopoly just like your favorite game?
Yeah. Anything where I could fill out forms. And like when me and my friend used to play Monopoly, we used to keep a logbook of every turn and money in and money out and like money owed and like keep the statistics of which properties. Like we were such dorks.
That's so funny. Like God. Other kids,
Sarah,
would get,
you would have
like...
never been able to cheat with Laura.
Oh, I'd have found a way. I just like the idea that other kids get like microphones and karaoke machines for their birthday, whereas you'd get like a checkbook or something.
Yeah, yeah. And I'd have filled the whole thing out studiously. Oh my God, yeah. Yeah.
That is amazing.
I bet your parents are like, how did we fuck this up?
Yeah.
Yes.
She wanted to be a banker.
Yeah. Oh, they could have been in their dream home in the Mediterranean by now. But no, I had to be allowed to follow my dreams.
Yeah. Oh, my goodness.
And you succeeded, which is a great thing.
Yeah.
Where do you think you'd work in radio if you'd done the radio specialism?
I don't know. Like I say, I never think about the past. I just carry on.
Yeah, so I just went,
oh, the radio doesn't exist now. I guess I do this. And then it's probably quite telling that I went, oh, I'll do this specialism. Oh, this is all right. I guess I'll do this as a career.
Yeah.
I wanted to be an
actress. Did it feel like it clicked sort of when you started doing the stand-up?
No, I don't think so. I think I was really bad at it and it was difficult. And it was something so new that I had no idea how to get going. But what helped was like, it wasn't like a course that was like, oh, here's how to be a stand-up comedian. It was like a study of the psychology of humor and psychology, which is one of my big passions is psychology. So you did that. But part of the course was you had to do 10 gigs and then document what are like things that had affected the gig. Like what was the room like, or why did the gig go better or worse than the last one kind of thing. And
I blame the room.
And I guess like looking into that and studying that, I think it was something somewhere around 50 gigs instead of 10 that I did. And I just like got so into, oh, okay, that gig went like that. And then I kind of thought, well, I still want to act, but as far as I could work out, acting seemed much harder to get started in because someone had to say yes to an audition, whereas comedy had been quite easy to get pub tens and fives and stuff. And I sort of thought, I reckon if I get into comedy, I can circle back round to all the other interesting things I wanted to do, you know, like comedians get to do all sorts of jobs they're not qualified for. It's great.
Yeah, you're always on the radio now.
Yeah.
You're on you're a writer.
Jobs, you know? And like I've written books and via becoming a comedian, like it's a clever job for just, if people like you enough as a comic, they'll let you do all sorts of stuff you're not very good at.
They
it's
let me
great.
Be a fireman in January.
Yeah, that's right.
I'll give you anything.
What I liked about what you said, that you got so into like, the sort of like minutiae of like what happened at that gig. I like that you brought your sort of like filling forms bank energy to the beginning of your stand-up career.
I always think I'm a really unlikely person to be a comedian. I'm not one of those scatty, like, you know, the sort of people that are like, God, they're so weird and wacky. Oh, you just, they had to be a comedian. They couldn't do anything else. I'm not like that. I'd have made a really great PA and I'm sort of like scraping a living in comedy instead because the organization and the planning and the attention to detail I'm nailing. And then the rest of it is like, Oh my God,
it's so much of it. I always say this to people. It's like, you don't understand how big of an admin job this is.
Yeah.
Like, it really is so much admin.
Yeah. Also,
Laura, you are incredibly funny as well. You're so witty. Like, and you.
Oh, yeah. I'm just saying, like, that is, I'm just seeing that as like, we don't even have to mention that. Obviously, every time you mention that, that's nonsense. You're so funny.
Yeah.
Well, thank you. But I like being silly.
The banking world is missing out.
I'd have been so rich.
Yeah. And you'd have really cheered for up an HSBC, wouldn't you? So.
Yeah.
That sounded more misogynistic than I need meant it to. I meant with humor, whereas it sounded like I was like, oh, you'd look lovely behind the desk there, Laura.
And what a nice thing to say, actually, Sarah.
That's a great one. And that really is, I think, a sliding doors moment by the sounds of things, because it does seem like a little bit like you're like, okay, this is the direction we're all heading in.
Yeah. I think as I get older, I realize like I've definitely got happier and happier as I've got older. Mm. And all of the desperate things I was desperately scared of that have happened weren't actually that bad once they happened. I worked them out. So I think like all of those, like, what if I'd done radio? I just don't ever have the capacity to, I don't bother with them. And it's not a conscious thing. I'm not saying like, it's my like mindset of not bothering. I forget to bother wondering what would have been because I just kind of go boop, boop this then and worry about the future instead.
I think that's lovely. You know,
I think that's really good. I'm quite envious because I'm really good at dwelling.
Oh,
yeah. Really We're strong work.
Incredible.
Well done.
But then when do you worry about the future? If you're worrying about the past, when do you worry about the future?
I go in between.
Yeah. There's enough space and time for it.
Oh, sure. There's all day.
Laura, thank you so much for doing this.
Thank you so much, Laura. That was amazing. No.
Would you please let everybody know where they can find you and what work of yours they can consume?
Yes, at the moment, I'd love you to listen to my podcast, which is called Lex Education. And my little brother, he of Needing New Shoes fame, is who is not a comedian now. He did make the sensible choice. He is trying to help me pass my GCSE science by teaching me the GCSE science curriculum. So if you would like to hear two siblings who are not qualified in any way to be doing this, squabble with each other into oblivion via trying to remember what atoms and ions are, then have a listen to that. I've got two books, Clop Actually and Pivot. They're really fun and they're on Audible, Kindle, bookstores, all that sort of stuff. Those are my things that I'm pushing at the moment.
Amazing. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thanks, Laura. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Laura Lex, everybody.
That was Laura Lex. Two great stories.
So good.
Fascinating. Haunting.
Yeah. Haunting.
Haunting. I feel haunted.
What should we do? Should we tell people... Well,
we should thank them. Thank you very much. Thank you again. Always thank you very much for listening. We appreciate you.
Yeah.
If you haven't already, please sign up to our Patreon to support us making this podcast. Yeah. We're doing it
Follow
all ourselves,
online.
As we've said. So yeah, any support you can give us would be very appreciated. Share it if you're enjoying it. Please send it to people. You've got a mate who wants to hear this.
Yeah.
Send it to him.
I really don't like back. We are doing everything ourselves and it's very sweet. Me and Sarah trying to figure out how to podcast. It's a podcast itself. I think
we're learning. I've never felt more elderly in my life trying to do some of this technology, but I think we're doing a good job. So thanks so much, guys. Send us an email if you have any stories you'd like us to tell on the podcast. We'll do some Patreon only episodes where we read those out, so please let
come
us know
to our previews.
Yes, come to our previews. We're doing two on the 16th and 17th of April at different locations because we are that bad at admin. So come and see us there. You can find all the information online. Yeah,
that's it.
That's all it is. That's what this was.
Well, thank you for. I hope you enjoyed this international version.
Yeah, you just listened to a podcast that took place in the UK and the Nether regions.
Yes, that's right. I podcasted from my vagina,
directly from Nikki's Nether regions, which is why I was going to say, which is why it's so echoey.
I know, because I just moved for this last bit. I had to move. I had to give my dad his office space back. So now it's really echoey. And that is indeed what I think my vagina sounds like.
My brain thought of the joke before I really understood the implications of what I was saying.
All right, let's cut this now before Sarah gets grosser.
Too offensive. Well, thank you for listening. And
you'll hear us next time.
I really am pushing you into your catchphrase at this stage.
Yeah.
Thank you for listening to Thank Fuck for That. It was hosted by Mickey Overman and Sarah Keyworth, and produced by Lucas Jeffco, with music from Ben Kavanagh.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
How would you like to look 5 years younger? In a clinical study, people that had volume added with Juvederm Voluma XC in the cheeks perceived themselves as looking 5 years younger at 6 months after treatment. Look younger, feel like you. Add volume for lift and contour in the cheeks with Juvederm Voluma XC. Reverse signs of aging by adding volume to smooth laugh lines with Juvederm Volure XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.